again, again.
Chewie. We're home.
I bypassed the compressor.
You were the chosen one!
Something truly special.
Congratulations. You are being rescued.
Revenge is not the Jedi way.
I am no Jedi.
The ability to speak might not make you intelligent, but we're going to try to prove otherwise. This is the Clashing Sabers podcast. I am one of your hosts, Brandon, and I am here with my co-hosts. First, he is best known as the smallest man to ever complete the Kessel Run in less than 12 parsecs. It's...
Did you say smallest man?
Yes. You don't get the reference?
I don't. I'm sorry.
DeVore, okay.
I get the reference.
We'll try this one then, Sir Drew, okay. Who didn't introduce right. himself.
Let me step back up to the plate.
Our better co-host is, he is the battle droid who just came fresh out of the slammer. It's
DeVore. Hello.
Drew, anything?
I get it now.
Okay. Golly.
Hey, it's me. I'm the problem. It's me.
Karma, man. Karma will get you. Tonight, guys, we are looking forward to Tales of the Empire. And we're actually going to be talking on this episode about what future Tales of seasons could contain. Because we didn't expect Tales of the Empire. And so there could be anything coming in the future for this series. So that's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to kind of pitch different ideas around for what future seasons could look like there. But before we get into that, please make sure you are subscribed to the channel. You get all of our shows right on here. And I can tell you some pretty cool stuff is in the works and we'll be releasing in the very near future. So there's a lot to look forward to there. Stuff that no other podcasts are doing is happening on the Clashing Sabers podcast network. So make sure you're subscribed there and make sure you're following us on all of the socials. So with that in mind, let's go ahead and get started in the show. And we like to ask an important question on this particular show. And it is, what did we think of the Tortured Poets Department?
Oh no!
Because you knew we were going to talk about it, and I feel like I haven't quite gotten y'all's opinion yet. I haven't asked on purpose because I wanted to know live on the air. How are you guys feeling about this double album 31 song release?
I've been having a great time with it. I've been really enjoying it. I've been listening to it almost exclusively over the past week.
Oh my
with
goodness.
Some difference, with some other things here and there mixed in. But yeah, I think I had a very, what I would call sort of typical experience thus far with her albums, where like I do that first listen when it comes out and it kind of all just hits me like a wave. But then I kind of go back to it and then there's tracks that kind of start just, you know, like bubbling up to the surface and I kind of keep going back to those. But yeah. I've been enjoying it.
Drew, how are we feeling? Because I'm getting some shady vibes over there.
I have listened to it one time. And I think I'm just about done with it already.
Wow. Hey.
Yeah, I bounced on this one hard. I think part of it was I was super frustrated the day I bought it because I picked out a copy that I liked and took it home only to realize that it was 50% of the music. Like the surprise release of a double album when people had been asked to pre-order things and to get in line for things and be excited about a release, all of a sudden for those releases to not really mean anything, I was actually really frustrated with that and I wasn't expecting to be. So I went into it a little negatively when I learned about that. And then when I heard it, it's more of the same Jack Antonoff, mushy 80s, 90s synths that I was really tired of in Midnights already. And it was the back half of the Anthologies album that was actually more interesting because there were actual instruments being played. I think somebody needed an editor on this one big time. There's so much just stream of consciousness, it seems to me, that we've lost a lot of the polish and the finesse and the purpose that, you know, other things have done. It may just be me. This one may not be for me, but it is so much like Midnight's, which is already not my favorite album in the world, that I'm not a fan. This one's not going to be for me.
Yeah, it's mid-tier for me.
There's no one ever, anyone ever wrote a song about Florida that was that excited about the state.
Speaking as someone from the state, I can concur with that.
I mean,
in my opinion, the best thing to come out of this album is the fact that my TikTok feed is now just Star Wars videos with Taylor Swift music layered over the top, and I'm not mad about that.
Not so bad, is it?
My biggest thing is just how many of the songs sound the same. Is kind of hard to get into. But overall, I do like it. Lyrically, I think it's really good. I think there's some standout songs. For example, the Smallest Man Who Ever Lived is actually pretty good. Little Old Me, Who's Afraid of Little Old Me, is definitely what I think the best one on the album. But
really? Wow.
That's my personal favorite. I feel like this is the end of this era of Taylor Swift. I think this double release is kind of her getting this last set of stuff out, and we're about to see a reinvention of her again in the way we did when she came out with Reputation. That I think, I don't know what it is going to be, but I don't think we're going to get another slow plodding album kind of like this one. We're not going to be synthy or folky or anything like that. Like, I would not be surprised, and I say this somewhat jokingly, but not completely, if like the next album is full rock and roll, like just come out with something completely new. Because yeah,
I'd be okay with that. I mean, it's about time. I'm just, this is like the third or fourth album that's built on this style approach, and I haven't liked it from the beginning.
Yeah, I'm still very much a fearless speak now person. So that's just me.
Yeah, your album rankings that you put on Facebook was wild.
It was bananas.
It was absurd.
I disbelieve.
Let's see if we can find it.
I stand by them. Oh, I'm sure.
Do you really?
Yes, 100%.
Yeah, hang on, I'm going to find that list too.
Guys, it's my own profile. I can probably find it pretty quickly.
Yeah, but we don't want to have any revisionist history going on.
Oh, no. I have no shame about it. All right. Best album, Speak Now. No discussion. Fearless, 1989.
Okay, time out, because you have already gone off the deep end. Why is Fearless not the best one?
Because Speak Now has no skippable songs.
Fearless has no skippables. Speak Now has all great songs, but Fearless.
I will allow that discussion. Those two I can allow to be changed.
Okay, fair enough.
1989.
Acceptable.
Red, Reputation, Midnight's Tortured Poets, her debut album. Folklore and Evermore are tied.
That's where I went insane.
Yes, same.
Was that bottom?
Same.
Okay, that is a personal bias. I'm not a huge folk kind of fan, so that particular, like, I don't usually listen to any like slow music, so that is not really something that I go back to. So that's more me. And then Lover ranks at the end for me.
When this is what I wanted to ask you about it. When you're considering this, especially at the bottom, towards the end of the ranking, do you consider those to be bad, or do you just happen to have them in order? They're still good, but they're just not the ones you're
going to... Oh, they're still good. Does that make sense? Yeah, no. They're all... This is like 10, or well, I guess 11, because there's a tie. But these are 11 albums that I at least like all of them, love some of them. I would say love the majority of them. It's very much kind of like Star Wars. Like, Solo might be towards the bottom of my list, but I still friggin' love that movie, right?
Interesting.
So it's all stuff that I love, but I
where are you I putting Folklore and Evermore? And do you put them together? And why?
Do I put them together?
And how dare you?
I don't. I think of them differently. It might be just as a function of like how the albums kind of just impact me personally and which one I listen to more. I do kind of think of them separately. Though I do also kind of see the perspective of like mushing them together.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, Folklore, Folklore is probably in the top three for me. Like it was just, few other just like pieces of pop culture just walloped me the way that that album did when it came out. And I mean, admittedly, a lot of it was the time and what was happening in the world and every and all of that. But it was just this complete, total, perfect storm that just I was not prepared for, but also I needed it.
Interesting. I love that. If you're going to listen to one or the other of the album, which one are you going to first?
Folklore or Evermore?
Yeah.
Folklore.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. See, I think Evermore is good. Like, Evermore has more songs at, like, the, you know, the B range, like the A minus B plus range. Mm-hmm. But Folklore has A pluses and then some stuff that's below B. I don't really know where it is, but there's just a couple tracks from Folklore that are just unbelievably good. But then Evermore has Gold Rush, which is probably my favorite song.
All right. That's a good one.
Like that is like, that had my most plays in Spotify like every year since it came out. It's always my number one track in the wrap up.
Yeah, and see, it's interesting, Devore, you talked about, you know, it kind of being what's happening in the world. And when those albums came out, like, I was not in a place where I needed, like, emotional music like that. Like, I needed music to be an escape, and those weren't really that. So that's probably part of the function behind why they don't really rank super high for me. Is like,
that makes sense.
Music, a lot of times, is escapism. And that's why Tortured Poets, just with what I've been going through in my life the past couple of years, like it's great. Like the lyricism and for what I think for what she was trying to say, I think she said it. It's just not like what I go to music for. Whereas looking back at some of the other things that were more playful, more uplifting, if you will, those are ones I go revisit far, far more often than some of the more recent stuff. So, but again, like I think this is the end of this era, and we're gonna get a whole new version of Taylor Swift, and it's gonna be, I think, a lot more along the Reputation line of things, which I'm not mad about, because.
Yeah, Reputation has grown on me over time. I was not a fan of that when it first hit, but over time I've learned to really appreciate it. And same thing, not exactly same thing yet with Midnights, where I did not like it. And now there are a couple tracks that I really do prefer. So maybe the same thing will happen with Tortured Poets, but it's going to take some time to work through it because, Brandon, kind of like you said, I feel like we've covered a lot of this ground thematically,
mm-hmm.
like in her work so far. So I was kind of surprised to see a lot of things that seem to go back to the same well. And maybe, again, just the way I am kind of interpreting and seeing things through it. But it's just like, I thought she was ready for more. And this seems to be, I don't want to say stuck in the same place, but it certainly doesn't feel like she's, you know, I keep going in Reputation where she says, you know, the old Taylor can't come to the phone right now because she's dead. Like, clearly she's not that dead. Like, she may be mostly dead, but I feel like this particular part of life seems to be hanging on a lot longer than other sections have. Like, each in chronological order, you can kind of feel the flow, you know, from one, two, to the next, to the next, to the next. And I feel like we've been parked here for quite some time.
Yeah, that's valid. It'll be interesting to see what comes next. Like,
yeah,
because
which feel, but doesn't that in and of itself feel a little like bad? Like, we're already ready to move on and it's been a week?
I can see that perspective. I don't necessarily think so. Okay. Like, I'm always kind of looking at, all right, cool, like, what's next? And I don't think that necessarily negates from the good that's happening now.
Fair enough.
So.
I'm a little concerned about Devorah listening to it for the whole week. That's the only thing he's listening to. I'm a little concerned.
He's in a very emotional state.
It's been a year. It's been 2024. Let me tell you something.
Should we be texting Meg and making sure she's okay too?
Maybe.
Oh, no.
Oh, goodness.
Suddenly got too real quick. Go back to the lightsabers.
Yeah. Pew, pew. Well, speaking of Star Wars, have you guys been Star Warsing anything interesting lately?
I'm working my way through the Defy the Storm.
Okay.
High Republic book.
Nice.
Now.
Go ahead.
I have a question for you, and we're going to be non-spoiler in this. But
of course.
It's not a spoiler to say Out of the Shadows from Phase 1 of the High Republic is very important to Defy the Storm. So you, having not read Out of the Shadows recently...
Or ever.
Okay, or ever.
Yep.
How is experience...
It's not great, Dan. It's hard. It's very challenging where I'm like, there's a lot of stuff I'm pretty sure I'm supposed to know, and clearly I do not.
Yeah.
There's, I just chalked it up to there being something I missed and I didn't know it was that one. Okay. That one's been on my list to get, but I just haven't done it yet. But I'll tell you, having such confidence in the two authors behind this, the same way that they did Path of Deceit, that I'm willing to stick through it because I know the ending will be satisfactory enough to make it all worthwhile. And it's not like... I feel like this one's not bad in making sure you know the important information for the story. Like, it's given enough cliff notes that I don't feel completely lost.
Okay.
I just kind of have to accept it and roll with it. But man, do they want you to have more attachment to these characters than I do currently. And again, it's probably because I don't know who they are.
Well, like,
yeah, that would help.
I just recently read Test of Courage and Out of the Shadows. I was on The Pod Awakens and we were covering those books, and you can check that out on their YouTube channel. And so it was just like, I didn't know that those are basically like it's almost like it's a trilogy of sorts, and Defy the Storm is the third book in that trilogy that we have right now.
Oh.
And so I did not know that going into Defy the Storm, but I'm like 50 pages in going, I'm really glad I reread those things. So, Devorah, have you delved into it yet?
Yes, I have. Okay. I finished a little while back, and I enjoyed it. I think it was sort of, as far as High Republic books go, I would say like middle of the road. In terms of, like, you know, like, it's one that, like, it doesn't fall into the, like, some category of High Republic books where, like, I really don't remember what happened in that book. But also it's not, you know, like, Path of Deceit level, like, this blew me away.
Right.
So it's somewhere middle of the pack. Again, without spoiling anything, the book introduces a new variable into an already complicated equation that did sort of, like, leave me feeling like, how are they going to wrap this up? You know?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Because, you know, we are now officially, with that book, one third of the way through Phase 3.
True.
And there's a lot. There's a lot that needs to happen, and not a lot of, you know, not a lot of pages and ink in which to have it all happen. So I'm sort of sitting here like, man, what is the end game?
Well, it's kind of interesting to think about, you know, you and I in our group chat over the Bad Batch have been saying the same thing about
yes,
the Bad Batch. So it's almost like is Star Wars at this place where they're building a whole lot of stuff up and then we're going to get unsatisfying conclusions? We don't know, obviously, but it's kind of coincidental that we're having these conversations at the same time. Like, correlation doesn't equal causation, but, you know, you might want to pay attention to it.
But it sure feels like it sometimes.
Yeah, it does. We'll see. I mean, we got our advanced copies digitally of Temptation of the Force, so we'll see where that goes. I have been catching up on some of the High Republic Phase 1 comics.
Nice.
Because I have spare time to do so. And so lots of Avar Chris in my life right now. And
nothing wrong with that.
No, nothing wrong with that. But I did not realize like how aggressive she is in the comics.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Like Light of the Jedi is a much more like she's stern. She's like, you know, to the point. She's very much a leader, but she's a lot calmer. And in the comics, she is much brasher and more aggressive. And it's been kind of fun to read and see this different side of her that I hadn't experienced before. So,
is that just the Phase 1 comics that you're catching up through?
I mean, I'm going to go through the rest of them as well.
I didn't know if you'd finished that one yet, the way it ends with Starlight Beacon.
No, I haven't. I am in Volume 3. I'm just where...
You're almost done.
Yeah. I'm about a third of the way through Volume 3.
Some of the stuff in that is just like you turn the page and your mind is blown immediately. There's a lot of, that one's worth it.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm gonna finish that one, and then I also got Trial of Shadows or something like that. It's a mystery one.
Oh, Trail of Shadows.
Trail of Shadows. Yes. So that is my next endeavor, and then I think that'll be the mainline comics for Phase 1. Nice. And so yeah. Lots of fun.
Oh, hey, we've read The Living Force, and it's been released, so we can talk about it if you need to.
Yes, we can.
I have not finished reading it yet.
Oh.
I am currently reading it.
How? Like, what percentage of the way through it are you?
I'm about 150 pages in.
Okay, that's not a percent, but cool. Okay.
Okay, fine.
What's the last thing that happened?
On a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you love Yarl Poof? This will tell us where you are.
God,
in the book.
Oh, my God. It's delightful.
A solid 9.5.
Okay, you're not quite there yet, then, because this is, we should be dubbing 2024 the Yarl Poof Renaissance.
The year of the poof.
The year of the Yarl of the poof. I don't know. It's in there somewhere, but holy cow. Yarl Poof, guys.
Yeah, no, it's fun. And I've said, like, plenty of times, like, it's fun when we get these one-off books in the midst of High Republic, because it's kind of like a palate cleanser. And John Jackson Miller is just he's just a fun writer. Like, his books are just always really enjoyable. They are not necessarily the weightiest books, you know. It's not a Shadow of the Sith or anything. It's not, you know, Alphabet Squadron, where you're dealing with these deeper, darker themes and more psychological ideas. They're fun. And that's honestly a great compliment for a Star Wars book. Like, I think it is just a lot of fun to go on the ride with these characters, and you always want to see what's next. And I like the way that he's balancing having all of the Jedi Council members on this particular mission. Wait to hear this. Mace Windu is enjoyable so far in this book. He hasn't completely pissed me off yet. So there is that. It's got going for it. So we'll see. I'm excited to keep reading it. I'm hoping to get a good portion of it done over the weekend. And Lindsay now will be recording about Defy the Storm, and then that'll be our next one. So it's going to be
nice.
Going to be good. So with that in mind, we've got, I mean, at the time of recording on the 26th of April, we've got a week until May the 4th. It's next next weekend. And we're getting Tales of the Empire, which is Tales of the Jedi Season 2, which is fun to say.
It's not confusing at all.
No, not at all. So we kind of had the idea, DeVore particularly had the idea of let's talk about what future Tales of Seasons could be. And each of us kind of pitch an idea or two that could happen. If we're getting Tales of the Empire, something we didn't expect, to spend more time in the Empire, but that's a whole nother conversation. What other Tales of shows could we get? So we're going to throw those out here and have a little discussion about what they could look like. So DeVore, since this was your idea initially, do you want to go ahead and kind of share your idea first, and we can talk about what you came up with and the possibilities of it in the future?
All right. Yeah, I will do my pitch for my Tales of. I won't beat around the bush. It's Tales of the Separatists. All right. We're going in the prequels.
You mean the Clone Wars?
Not quite. Just listen.
Okay.
It's about the Clone Wars, but it's also not really about the Clone Wars. That's why it's called Tales of the Separatists. It's different. So my pitch for this one was I wanted to sort of, you know, you immediately went to Clone Wars, but really what I'm thinking with this one is almost sort of like backwards and forwards from the Clone Wars. Because I think something that, like, I think right now in canon, like, we haven't spent a whole lot of time. There's, like, not a lot of storytelling. I mean, of course, in the kind of Clone Wars proper period, we get a little bit of insight into the Separatists. I mean, both from, like, obviously as the kind of main adversary, but then, you know, we have those plots where, like, Padme's going to Raxus and she's, you know, with Mina Bonteri and stuff, and you kind of see how they work and stuff. But I think there's still a lot of storytelling around the Separatists and separatism that is, I think, missing, that I think is really important to tell. And so what I'm thinking for my Tales of the Separatists is something that actually kind of looks at some of those missing pieces of the story, some of those stories that are kind of around the Clone Wars that are not necessarily set within the Clone Wars. And so I have sort of two characters that I want to use to kind of follow on that sort of, like, the backwards looking kind of before the Clone Wars, you know, leading up to it, and then the sort of forward looking beyond the Clone Wars. And so for my backward looking, so for my first character would be my first tale, will of course be none other than General Grievous himself. So if you go to the Clone Wars episode Layer of Grievous, so this is where Kit Fisto and I don't remember the Padawan, they go to his lair, the titular lair of Grievous on Vasic 3. They go in there and they kind of come across these statues where you sort of see this warrior who's kind of gradually transforming into, you know, the person that we know is General Grievous. Filoni kind of, in kind of giving commentary on that episode, sort of had some interesting things to say about that and, like, the way that they did that episode, in that he sort of wanted to present this sort of, like, from a certain point of view about Grievous's origin. Because he says, like, if you look in there, like, in his lair, and then sort of some of the things he says, like, he kind of has this story about this transformation to a cyborg is almost being something like voluntary. Like, he kind of, like, gradually, you know, becomes less organic and more cybernetic as a way to, you know, make himself more powerful. And he even has a line to that in the episode where he talks about, like, I think when it's his little, like, medical droid, it talks about, like, he was like, I wonder why you submitted to the changes. And then he replies, like, improvements, I submit to no one. And so, Grievous has this kind of self story about, like, you know, he did this voluntarily, did this on purpose to make himself a better warrior. And then, of course, like, for people who are familiar with the legend story of Grievous, in Legends, Grievous is a victim of a shuttle accident that is essentially engineered by the Separatists so that they can rebuild him into a essentially robo-killer warrior. And so what Filoni was doing, he sort of talks about like these two stories of Grievous as being this like which one is true, which isn't. Like, is Grievous kind of telling a version of the story that like he wants to tell, where like he did all of this on purpose, as opposed to like something that was kind of inflicted upon him in the kind of, you know, in the original Legends telling of Grievous's origin. And so what I want to do with the first tale with Grievous is kind of go back in time and sort of look at him as he was before he becomes a cyborg and before he becomes part of the Separatists, and kind of tell that story, and maybe tell that story in a way that's like, you know, leaves it to kind of a more ambiguous read, where like you could have maybe the old Legends read of like, oh yeah, like this was done to him by the Separatists. They deliberately maimed him so that they could turn him into a cyborg. Or you could have like a take or read on it. It's like, oh, he kind of like went along with this because he saw some, you know, advantage or, you know, benefit to himself, that he could make himself more powerful by becoming, you know, more machine than man. So I think I think there's an interesting story there in terms of going back and kind of telling a little bit of his canon backstory, because there's not a lot of canon backstory on Grievous, you know, before you get into the Clone Wars. So I think that that could be explored really interestingly in terms of like how does this particular character kind of find his way into the Separatists and, you know, becomes the character that we're familiar with by the time we get to the Clone Wars. So that's one tale, or one person, which is General Grievous. Now for the back end, looking sort of forward and particularly beyond the Clone Wars, I thought about there's a couple different characters that came to mind. The low-hanging fruit, of course, would be, you know, Asajj Ventress, now that we know, you know, she's still around. But I thought, too easy, didn't want to, you know, pick that. And so for my second tale, you know, for the second half of my Tales of the Separatists, I wanted to pick a character who plays an important role in a season of Star Wars TV, despite the fact that he himself does not actually appear in that season of Star Wars TV. And that is Anto Krieger. So Andor fans will remember, Anto Krieger is a rebel leader who Luthen essentially offers up to be sacrificed and have his cell, you know, just found and destroyed by the Empire as a way to kind of protect his inside man. And this is a big source of tension between him and Saw Gerrera. And one of the things that we know, we don't know much about him. Again, he doesn't appear in the show apart from a hologram. But one of the things that we know about Krieger's backstory is that he was a former Separatist, and that he was part of a rebel cell that was still sort of Separatist allied. I think it's called the Neo-Separatist Alliance. And one of the things that we know in canon, again, sort of abstractly, is that there is this kind of Separatist to rebel pipeline. Like, you know, we're familiar with, in terms of like the folks who joined the rebellion, we're familiar with, you know, your Mon Mothma types, like the folks who used to be in the Republic and then, you know, left when it became the Empire. We know about, you know, Jedi who become part of the rebellion. And it's part of the canon, you know, history of the rebellion that you have ex-Separatists who become part of it. But again, it's not something that we've spent a lot of time with or gotten to really follow. We're starting to get, I mean, you know, with this example with Andor, you know, we have one character is mentioned. There's a little bit of it in Bad Batch that we've gotten recently with Avit Singh, who is the senator from Raxus, who we get to see in season 2 at first, and then in season 3 we see him with I'm blanking on her name. Who is the
Senator Chuchi?
Yeah, with Senator Chuchi, and you see them kind of having like proto, you know, rebellion conversations about resisting the Emperor. And so we're getting these little, like, you know, smatterings, tastings of these, you know, folks who were once Separatists and then in, you know, the period of the Empire, you know, continue fighting, you know, ostensibly the same government that has now changed. But now they're, you know, they've gone from being sort of quote-unquote the bad guys into now becoming part of the quote-unquote good guys. And so I think that's a really interesting story to tell about, like, I think fitting into, like, a lot of the sort of, like, head-turning stuff that happens once the Republic becomes the Empire. It's like, you know, your allies now become your enemies, and your enemies become your allies. you know, the guys that you thought were bad now become good. And so I think he is a character, given that we don't have a lot about him in canon, that would be a good vehicle to kind of tell that forward-looking story of, like, what is the legacy of these folks, you know, who fought against the Republic? What is it beyond the Clone Wars once the Republic doesn't exist anymore, and now you have this kind of emergent rebellion? So
wow,
that is my pitch for Tales of the Separatists.
Oh, I love that. I can't wait for that to get greenlit.
Holy
hire
cow.
Me, Lucasfilm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure somebody from there listens to the show, right, Brandon?
Sure, we'll go with that.
Yeah.
Dave, my DMs are open. Get in there.
I love the Grievous stuff. I love the idea of the Grievous stuff. I've always been fascinated by him as a character and what caused him to become who he is. And I definitely don't think that that is something that has been explored enough. I would really actually, I know Asajj is the low hanging fruit, but I would love more story with her after the fall of the Separatists. Like, even though she wasn't a part of it, you know, she is kind of the prototypical example of the consequences of joining that movement, or at least what it was during the Clone Wars. Like, it, you're right, it kind of like transitions post Clone Wars into something different, and that's something that I think she would have to deal with. That would be real interesting to see. I don't know if Anto Krieger's getting everybody to their seats, but I respect the take. I think it, like, that's one of those situations where, like, if they tell a good story, right? It's kind of like Morgan Elsbeth. Like, I'm not super excited about Morgan Elsbeth being a feature character in Tales of the Empire. But if they tell a good story,
right?
And that's kind of, like, it seems like in yours, you know, with the Grievous exploration is a character exploration, whereas the other three are going to be more of a exploration of the situation in the galaxy. And so instead of juxtaposing just two characters who go on similar but different paths, kind of like they did with Ahsoka and Dooku, you're contrasting a person in a situation, which would take the show in a direction it hasn't been before, which could be really compelling.
Has Asajj Ventress's addition to the Bad Batch been a valuable one? Like, is she in more than just, like, one episode?
So far, she's only been in one episode.
Yeah.
We have one episode left to go.
Really? It's almost over?
It's almost over.
Next week.
Next week is the final episode of the series. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, trust me. We're definitely not stressing about that at all. I would say it was a valuable addition. There's some things that hopefully, you know, will happen in or will be paid off in the finale that maybe weren't in her particular episode. And I'm trying not to spoil it for people who haven't watched it, because I know some people are behind.
Oh, okay.
So I think it was a solid addition. We'll see if it becomes more than that. But it was definitely cool to see her on the screen again.
Fair enough. Good deal. Good deal.
So, Drew, anything else on Tales of the Separatists?
Anything that gives us an opportunity for more Saw Gerrera content, I'm 100% on board. So you can
there
give
you
me
go.
Any of those. I was trying to see if I could remember his little spiel about, like, he goes off about the different groups that
Human cultists.
Yeah, yeah. And I was like, there's some kind of
galaxy
cultist.
Partitionists. I love that. It's so good. I love Forrest Whitaker.
Watch that episode. Saw Gerrera is a fascinating character. We just deserve more of that all the time, because he's just is such a different side of the rebellion than we normally see. And I think that it's important to remember that there had to be some teams out there who got their hands dirty. And you know, he was definitely on the forefront of that adventure.
Okay, so here's a question. Luthen. And it's been a while since I've watched Andor. The rewatch is coming. Do we know if what side of the Clone War he was on?
No.
Because he doesn't strike me as a person who would have taken sides at that point.
Possibly, but it could be, if we're talking these tales of, it could be really interesting to have a Tales of the Separatists and find Luthen as a Separatist.
Well, that would, but he maintains a position within the Empire. Like, even if it's not a political one publicly, you know, he's still around and involved, and Mon Mothma visits him, and she is seen walking into his establishment. So I don't feel like somebody who, if they had overt separatist ties, would do well in that environment.
That's fair. Maybe they weren't overt.
Maybe not. Obviously, he's a master of subterfuge and whatnot, so it wouldn't surprise me.
He just had a different wig when he was a separatist.
That's it.
How it worked.
It's like Clark Kent.
He smiled more. You know, that's really the difference. He put the wig on, he smiles, he twirls a little bit, you know, spinning like a girl in a brand new dress kind of thing, and it'll be fine.
Hey, it could be interesting.
If Obi-Wan can sneak through the Inquisitorium with a giant coat over top a little girl, and it'd be fine, a wig's not that far to stretch.
I mean, a wig's not far to stress at all when you can do that, but that's a whole nother conversation. So
that's a true story.
All right, Drew, you have the floor. You get to tell us what the next season of Tales of is going to be. What's it going to be?
I have three, and none of them are as in-depth as D'Vor, but they're kind of like one of those, once you get a certain flash of inspiration, and once you write it down, you can't erase it. And so some of them work. Some of them I would watch. Some of them I would not watch. My own ideas, no less. The first one that came to mind would be The Tales of the Spies and Slicers. And I'm imagining something during the Age of Rebellion. So we're looking at between Empire and Return of the Jedi, where ISB Chief Major Leo Paragaz is tasked with tracking down the Rebel spy network led by General Crix Maydeen, who led the sneak attack on the forest moon of Endor. So kind of like if we take the setting of Andor, but fast forward it several years, we've already got Rogue One, which addresses the Death Star One plans. But I don't know, and this may be something that is already covered in some of the comic book series, there hasn't been as much of a what about the second Death Star plans. We know there's a Bothan spy net, but we don't really know what that means in this universe anymore. We've had books and video games that try and tell us something that happened about that before, but we've got an opportunity to make it spy versus spy. And so I'm kind of imagining backstabbing and, you know, countermeasures and secret identities and handing of data pads between slipped coat sleeves and whatnot that really kind of create this era of mystique. I think that would be a lot of fun to watch. Option number two, which I can't decide if I would actually watch this one or not. But there are some elements of the Star Wars universe we don't really talk about a whole lot. And we don't talk about the Tales of the Lords of War. Something that The Last Jedi touched on is that no matter who is fighting who, there's always somebody getting rich. So what is it like when the manufacturing titans of the Sinar Fleet Systems and the Income Engineering Corporation were going head-to-head, but not through, you know, as much corporate warfare as through actual warfare? You know, the Sinar Fleet Systems basically mass-produced the entire TIE line for the Empire, where INCOM provided the X-Wings. So you've got a natural one versus the other. You've got the opportunity for maybe a little bit lighter approach to life and death, where it's just balance sheets and it's meeting quotas and copyright infringement. So kind of like the, if suits were in Star Wars, this is what I would imagine it would be like.
That's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard in my life.
If they keep making movies like Ford versus Ferrari and all these kinds of things, I don't see why we can't do that out in space.
That's fair.
But then there's the third one.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, this is one that I envisioned a single scene of the Tales of Gods and Generals. Except it's Captain Tarples and Jar Jar Binks.
Oh, my.
And it's just an old grizzled Captain Tarples who's like writing his memoir, like writing his memoirs down, like in the field. It's like, it's been 3 days since we've had fresh food, and we sit here under siege. And then Jar Jar's just like chasing butterflies in the background or something. That's all I've got. I don't know what else the rest of the show is like, but I feel like the Captain Tarples Jar Jar Binks is one of my favorite parts of Phantom Menace. So we should do more of that in some kind of fashion. And I think we can do like that. It would be great, that straight man versus, you know, the class clown approach. And it would, maybe in this era of the Ahmed Best Renaissance, we could get him back in there to own the character one more time.
That would be cool.
Can you imagine?
That would be
exciting. That would be. In an attempt to right the wrongs of the Aftermath trilogy and give Jar Jar his triumphant return to some kind of seat of power and not just dancing in the gutters.
Well, that's what I was thinking of, was the Aftermath trilogy. So what if you have kind of a grumpy old men thing where Jar Jar, you know, goes out, tries to make people happy. Tarful is telling him every day when he comes home, like, it's a waste of time. It's a waste of time. And eventually Jar Jar gets him to believe.
Out there fighting Jar Jar.
Exactly. This is not how it works. And Jar Jar just believes and eventually gets Tarful to believe as well. It's a heartwarming story.
I do feel I am obligated to mention that Tarples is killed in the Clone Wars. But yes.
Yeah, so were a lot of other
Darth
people.
Darth Maul spider legs.
Yeah.
There you go. That's
okay. Okay.
Captain hear Tarples me out. Spider hear me legs.
You beat me to it, but go with it.
No, Tarful will have octopus legs. That's the difference. That way it's unique. Oh.
And they spin, and he can swim underwater.
Obviously, he's a Gungan. He's got to be able to do that.
Guys, I think this has got, like, you know, some opportunity behind it.
Right? Yeah.
That is a word that you could put behind it.
It's definitely got something behind it.
I actually genuinely like the idea of the spies and slicers. I think that could be really cool. Change the title.
Like that era. Yeah, that Return of the Jedi aesthetic is a lot of fun. I don't really feel like we've done a lot in that spot.
No.
You know, trying to consider the different eras of Star Wars and see where people have been playing and what playgrounds, that era doesn't seem like it's gotten any kind of real attention. You know, the fall of the Empire and the rise of the New Republic until you get to the Mandalorian series, right? But surely there's something around there that was interesting to happen. And I think the plans for the Death Star 2 is still where it's at. Even though, you know, we've done it before in Legends. We literally have a Rogue One, but surely there's a Rogue 2 that we could do for the second Death Star. Why not?
Yeah, and yeah. I think you changed the name to, like, Tales of the Rebellion or something like that, because we've got so much Rebels, Rebellion stuff either before A New Hope or right around there. Like, all of that, all the stuff we have is build up to that. And then once we get to the original trilogy, save for like the comics and a book here and there, we don't really have a lot of content outside of the movies. And so, mm-hmm. like comics are very niche. I don't consider them like, it's going to sound mean, but I don't consider them mainstream Star Wars just because they're not as widely read as everything else. They are canon, and you can't take that away from them. And I like wish that I could get more into comics than I am. Like, even reading the High Republic ones, it's kind of like my ADHD is like, well, I'm gonna read a couple of these, and then I'm gonna go look at Facebook, and then I'm gonna read a couple more of these. Like, it's it's not a sit down and read the whole thing all the way through type experience. And like, so I feel like, you know, in between Empire and Return of the Jedi, there's a lot of story to tell in that year. Other stories around, like, were there other battles happening during the Battle of Endor, you know? Or is that the entirety of the Rebellion? Like,
yeah, there is some, so many, like, things. You know, Inferno Squadron plays a big role in that time period as well.
Yeah.
Immediately before and after the Battle of Endor. But I just feel like there's just more opportunity there. Yeah, Brandon, you're right about the comics in general. Like, we know that they are an integral part of the story, but I feel like if a creative director is given license to go do something new, I don't know that a comic book storyline is going to stop them from telling the story that they want to tell using the same characters kind of thing.
Oh, no, we've seen that happen already. I mean...
Exactly. Like, from small changes to big changes, you know... It's just kind of like, and I feel like that's not a terrible thing, honestly. Like, I don't know how I would feel about that if it was a change against a novel, though. That, like, there's some weird tier system of, like, level of commitment to an existing scene or set piece kind of thing. You know what I'm talking about?
Well, yeah. Sense? And
we had this problem in Legends. There were literally like eight categorizations of canonicity. And so you could actually math out what outranked the others. And it's ridiculous. That's how we got the planet Stooge on, by the way.
Oh, God.
exactly how. And all of us went, oh, no, not again, George.
So... Sam Witwer has talked about a conversation he had with Dave Filoni about like things when they contradict. And Filoni essentially said, like, these are campfire stories that are being told. They're legends, they're myths. Like, you're going to have some variation in how they're told. So it's okay if not everything matches up one to one. And I've kind of adopted that philosophy, but you're right. There is like a different like ranking. Like if you contradicted a movie, that'd be like contradicting like a primary source.
Hard. Yeah.
Right. Whereas when you get to comics, you're talking about tertiary sources and things that even come after that with have names I don't know, you know, like, so like there is a level of that. Like it was okay for the Bad Batch to contradict the Kanan comic because essentially they get the characters to the same place, just in a different route. That's okay. I don't have a problem with Tales of the Jedi contradicting the Ahsoka novel because there's beats that are the same that allow for you to understand, okay, so she went to some rural place. She faced some kind of inquisitor. Like, and it almost, in a way, makes it more intriguing of like, oh, which story is... truer, and it makes you want to delve into it a little bit more. So, but yeah, going back to the Tales of idea itself, like, I don't think anything that happens in one of those comics in between Empire and Jedi, which is where the Star Wars line is running right now, is going to be, you know, something that they take into consideration in order to make Tales of the Rebellion or which Tales of the Spies and Slicers or whatever we end up calling it, work, you know?
TM.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, no, it could be really cool.
Yeah, by the way, there is also already a book in the Star Wars universe called Tales of the Empire. It's been around for about 25 years now, and it's okay. But we've been here before, guys. What are we doing?
There's a new book. It's like an in-universe... history of the Galactic Empire that's coming out.
The Rise and Fall.
Rise and Fall of the Galactic Empire. Yeah, okay, ooh, that's what it is. That one's going to be good. All right, so I guess I'll delve into mine next. And I went with one that in title is a softball, but I tried to put a new spin on it. Tales of the Sith, I think, would be a great way to take this. And my version of Tales of the Sith pairs the stories of Darth Bane as he develops the rule of two with the story of Darth Maul's training. Because
interesting.
Bane, who created the rule of two to protect the Sith and make sure they survived. Whereas you have Maul, who was a victim of the rule of two because of how Palpatine basically used him up and spit him out when he was no longer useful. So you have these two contrasting ideas of the impact of the rule of two, and you also get to see the long-term consequence of Bane's decision to take the Sith in that direction. So my three episodes for Bane, first one is his initiation into the Sith. The second episode is when he realizes the fault of the Sith Order and that there's too many Sith, and kind of like in the Bane novels, how multiple undeserving apprentices could basically team up to overcome a master, and that would weaken the Order. And then his ending the Sith Order as it's known and finding his first apprentice to create the Rule of Two. A lot of that stuff is stuff pulled from the Bane trilogy, honestly.
Yeah, exactly.
But like, that's kind of purposeful, to be true, to be honest, because I think those books are really, really good. I think a lot of those story beats could work really well, and that's a situation where it's not really necessary to reinvent the wheel. So you honor legends in that way. That's another good element of that. But then you get to the three episodes about Maul. You have him being selected from Dathomir, or given to Palpatine by Mother Talzin. You can see how that goes about. The second episode is his training, and this has a particular focus on showing the torture and pain that Palpatine would have put him through, because I was kind of thinking this would be a reflection of the Ahsoka training episode that we got in the first season, where Anakin is using the clones to train Ahsoka. You know, he's having them use stuns. He's, you know, trying to help her, he's, you know, pushing her to be better, whereas in contrast you have of Palpatine, who is, you know, torturing and probably electrocuting Maul for the smallest of infractions. So that creates another link between Maul and Ahsoka, which I think is always cool to do. And then I think you close it out, and you close out the season with Maul's first kill, which would create his bloodlust, which would then be an inverse of the very first episode of Tales of the Jedi, which is the birth of Ahsoka. So you have her birth with paired with the death there by Maul. So I think that would be really cool. I think that's two characters that are not explored in that way. We've got a lot of stuff for Maul after Phantom Menace. We don't have a lot of stuff before Phantom Menace and what he was doing then. And I mean, he wasn't just sitting back, kicking up, waiting. You know, I'm just going to wait until it's time for my lightsaber duel. And like, he was out in the galaxy doing things.
Yeah.
We also don't have a lot of insight into the Sith, which like everything is from other people's perspectives of the Sith. We don't spend a lot of time actually seeing their practices, which I think would be really interesting to see through Tales of the Sith.
Yeah, I like this. I mean, I particularly like the angle of, like, you know, the nature of the Rule of Two and, like, why it originated in the first place versus, like, how it ultimately, like, came to be used. Because if you think about it, like, in Palpatine's case, like, with all three of his apprentices, I think you could make the case that, like, he doesn't really, in any of them, use the Rule of Two as it's kind of traditionally conceived. Like, there's no, with the exception maybe for a time with Anakin, is there really a notion that the apprentice will succeed the master, you know?
Yeah.
That's not the case with Maul. It's definitely not the case with Dooku. And again, maybe, like, pre-cyborg Anakin, maybe he had some notion that Anakin would one day supplant him, but certainly not, you know, post-Mustafar.
Yeah, I don't know that Palpatine would ever have allowed that to really have been a possibility. His plan has always kind of been that he is the one Sith, like, he is the culmination of the entire basically cult, that he is the figurehead of it now, and there will be no supplanting him. I mean, if that's not evidenced enough by his, the number of times that Vader would try and revolt against him, we've seen in games and books and stories and whatnot, then certainly his endless legion of clone bodies that he kept and pursuing the necromancer project and all of these things where he was intending to live literally forever. So he's definitely the top of the pyramid, and all other parts of it shall be squashed beneath him.
Yeah, the only thing I like hang my hat on where I'm like, maybe there was an exception for a time with Anakin, is that there's a lie in Revenge of the Sith right before he starts fighting Yoda in the Senate chambers where he says Darth Vader will become more powerful than either of us. And so that, like, for just that, like, again, that's all I have to hang on. This is the moment, like, okay, yeah. Like, he's conceding something here about Vader maybe being different. But again, maybe I'm reading too much into that.
I don't think you are, because that's before he knows that, you know, Vader is going to be encased in the suit. Like, I think if things go different on Mustafar, maybe Anakin is able to overcome him. But I think that relatively weakened him to the point where he wouldn't have been able to overcome. And that's part of why he wants Luke to team up with him to turn on the Emperor. Like, he doesn't feel like he can do it himself. And if you go to that, the scene where him and Luke are discussing things and discussing his, you know, being Anakin Skywalker prior to him taking him to the Emperor in Return of the Jedi, like, there's a hopelessness to Vader. There's not a viciousness to him like you have with a Maul. There's not a calculated nature to him like you have with Dooku. He's just hopeless and beaten down, and that kind of person doesn't overcome. And so it would be interesting to see, you know, two more vicious Sith, like Sith, like just more brutal Sith. And I don't necessarily mean that in, like, we've got to have, you know, rated R Star Wars kind of stuff like some people are always clamoring for, because I don't think that's the right direction for the saga to go. But most of our time is spent with, as far as Sith goes, is spent with Vader, somewhat Palpatine, and Dooku, right? And Vader is hopeless. Palpatine, we don't really get a lot of insight into, like, what he's actually doing. Like, a lot of stuff is us seeing him from the perspective of the Jedi. And then, you know, Dooku is more calculating and not really, like, he's a nobleman. He's not vicious.
He's not a believer in the same cause that Palpatine is.
Right.
Yeah.
His is much more just like, hey, we got to keep the lights on, and this particular system isn't doing it anymore.
Yeah. And so it would
he's never a real believer, was he? That's interesting.
No, I don't think he would. Like, I think he saw the Separatists and the Sith as a means to an end. Like, he saw a problem. Yeah. And it was the only solution that he was presented was going this route. And I feel like he believed, like, I don't think he even really truly wanted to be on the dark side. I think he was like, this is the means to an end. I have to be the one, like, to do this.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's, like, so strange, especially even Darth Maul says, at least we, you know, at last we will have our revenge. Like, we will reveal ourselves, and he's more on board, even as just kind of the lapdog.
So I've got one other idea. You guys want to hear my other?
Go for it.
Absolutely.
Okay. So this one goes in a very different direction. This is Tales of the Scoundrels.
Oh, boy. Here we go.
And this pairs the story of Han and Lando as they grow as smugglers and scoundrels. So this would be cool because you could go in a few different directions. You could change things up here and do two episodes with each of the characters individually and then two where they team up. Or you could do a whole 6-episode season where the whole thing is them teaming up. Or you can do 3 and 3. So you could have Han's pick up after Solo, his first meeting with Jabba, 2nd episode, his first encounter with Boba Fett, and then the moment when he leaves the Rebel base and returns to help Luke in the Death Star. You know, we've always wanted to know, like, what was the conversation that got him to turn around? Everybody talks about, you know, Chewie convinced him to turn around. Let's see that. That could be a really cool climactic moment. If we did 3 episodes about Lando, we get into how he starts as a smuggler. We get one of his most daring missions with L3. And then we get the moment when the Empire arrives on Cloud City. And so that would contrast his highest point in his daring mission with L3 and his lowest point when everything he's worked for is taken away from him for something that has nothing to do with him in the grand scheme of things. So that one's just a little more fun. I think the Sith would be a better season, but it could be a good time to get back on Han and Lando back on screen, get to see some more of them maybe teaming up together, or just get to see parts of their stories that we've wondered about. You know, like people have books in Legends have talked about the rivalry between Han and Boba Fett, but we don't really have anything about that in canon. Let's make that canon. You know, we've had this thread of a Lando show that became a movie that became a show again and is maybe a movie for years. Let's just do the right thing and put it in animation and let him just go wild and hell, maybe he meets up with Hondo because Hondo ends up everywhere. We've got Lando and Hondo together. That would be great.
Lando, so, Hondo, and Han?
Yeah, exactly. It's not confusing at all.
You want a Star Wars version of who's on first. That's what you're
doing. Yes, that's exactly what I want. So that one would be a little less serious, but, you know, again, sometimes Star Wars is just meant to be fun.
Agreed. It's allowed. We'll allow it, I think.
This one time.
This one time, but we're watching you. Tread lightly.
Oh, God. I've never tread lightly in my life.
If I can get away with a Jar Jar and Captain Tarple's adventure, you could have Solo Part 2, the animated series.
That's all I want. I just want Solo to continue on. It's so good.
When was the last time you watched that?
It
sounds certainly like you've watched it recently.
It's been a hot minute.
Okay.
Fair enough. But I do, I mean, it is...
It's been on my mind to rewatch that one. In the past couple of weeks, be like, you know what, maybe I should give it another shot.
I think if you go into it just going, this is just fun, and that's all it's meant to be, it's not meant to change your understanding of Star Wars, it's not there to, you know, break a whole lot of new ground in canon, it's Star Wars characters going on an adventure.
Are there any caves in there? I don't
remember. Oh, there's plenty of caves. Did you know that Han and Chewbacca actually met in a cave? That's a cave right there.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm really surprised you wouldn't have, like, Tales of the Cave. Like,
the or like that. Tales of the Caves and Water. It's just three episodes watching water wash up on shore. And then there's caves. It's
really abstract.
Yeah.
No. Yeah, the camera goes into the water and there's an underwater cave and it's like, oh no, now what does it mean?
Do y'all remember in Ahsoka, in there's that one beginning scene where it's just like all landscape of the where they project the map the first time?
Yeah.
And it's like a solid minute of just showing the water lapping up on the side of the rocks and all of this. It's just six episodes of that. It's just that.
I think they have that on Disney Plus.
They do.
It's the biomes.
It's the biomes and the galaxy of sounds and stuff like that.
Yeah, Tales of the Biomes.
Tales of the ASMR.
Oh. Some of those are not bad. By the way, some of them I'm not sure why they're there, but like, isn't there one for like Hoth, and you have speeders go by every so often, and the very, very satisfying engine hum as it goes in and out.
There's some good sounds in Star Wars, man.
Yeah, no kidding, Oscar award-winning sounds, no less.
It's really good. I like the Star Wars thing.
Now I'm looking at Disney Plus to see if I can find them, but I got to scroll through the Lego Star Wars Summer Vacation. Which I'm not sure I knew that was a thing.
Your kids don't watch Lego Star Wars?
They watch the Free Maker Adventures.
Okay, very good.
Good.
Yeah. Love those.
And we've seen like there's a Halloween one.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Okay, right, so now, some smatterings here and there.
They let's see. Right now they're enjoying the 12-year-old is enjoying the book of Korra, and the 10-year-old is watching Avatar: The Last Airbender.
Oh, okay. Nice.
Okay.
Because they were recently released in Fortnite as playable characters. And I was like, ah, cool. This is how we're going to learn things.
Yeah, that's how awesome. That's how kids learn things. They see my Ahsoka stuff. They're like, oh, that's the girl from Fortnite.
Yeah, exactly. It literally happened like a couple months ago where the 12-year-old was playing Fortnite. And he was like, who's that guy with yellow hair and the orange jumpsuit? And I was like, are you talking about Goku? He's like, yeah, what's up with that? And I said, sit down, son. I have much to do.
Sit down, son.
Much to learn. You still have.
Yeah, it was amazing. And now he's watched almost all of Dragon Ball Z.
Okay.
Beautiful.
It's wild, you know, the things that they watch that I used to watch when I was a kid. It's really sad, honestly.
That are cool now because of a video game.
Well, yeah, I guess so.
Hey. This is the galaxy we live in.
Maybe we could get like Shakespeare into Fortnite and some, you know, classic English literature and, you know, cool stuff like that. Is that cool?
Trust me, that would be asking far too much.
Brandon, do the cool kids like to read Shakespeare still?
I don't know if any of the kids like to read at all anymore. We're taking away all of their books. So.
Oh, wow.
Unless, of course, you support our nonprofit.
I'm so proud of you.
Star Wars books into classrooms across the country. And you can find more about that at patreon.com/clashingsabers or over on our website, clashingsabers.net. And you can also follow us on all of our socials at Clashing Sabers. So make sure you're doing that. And also, you know, let us know on those social channels what tales of seasons you want to see in the future. And we can have that conversation, talk about which ones we came up with that you enjoy or what you think we're missing, why we need Tales of the Droids, because the Droids show got canceled and now it's going to get repackaged into a 6-part miniseries.
They're going to do the same thing as they did with Rangers of the New Republic, is just kind of like force it and crowbarred into the Mandalorian story.
Oh, Pelly's pet droids. Like, that's going to be a droid story. Yeah. We're follow those guys for 3 episodes.
That's, you know what? 10 out of 10, I'd watch that.
Pair that with the Jar Jar and Captain Tarful stuff, I'm there for it.
Sitting on a gold mine here.
Well, Devor, if people want to hear more of your great ideas like that, where can they find you?
All right. So if you want to follow me on the socials, you can follow me on X at A Larger View Pod. If you want to hear more talk about the Tortured Poets Department, you can also listen to Space Swifties, a Star Wars and Taylor Swift podcast that I co-host with my wife, the one and only Meg Dowell.
And Drew, if they want to see what you're learning from Fortnite, where can they find you?
You can find me in our Facebook group, Star Wars Clashing Sabers. Best place to meet and discuss and argue about the Captain Tarpel's Jar Jar Binks adventures.
With droids. Now with droids.
What if it was more like, you know, the vibe of Logan, but with like Jar Jar Binks and Captain Tarples? That would be cool. Jar Jar Binks is a latent telepath.
The cognitive dissonance it would take to make that happen is rough.
That's kind of what I live for here, though, honestly.
That's true. And seriously, guys, make sure you're subscribed to the network. Check right now. Make sure whatever you're listening on, you are subscribed, because May the 4th, we've got some cool stuff coming out that you are not going to want to miss. I will not say more than that because it is not my particular project, but it's going to be really cool, and it's going to blow some minds. So make sure you're subscribed there, and go rate and review the show so that other people can find us and we can keep the conversation going. But until then, we will keep on doing what we do here and remembering that we always can look, if we need another season of Tales of, we can always look to Batch 8.
Hi-ho.
Hi-ho.
All Clashing Sabers productions are the intellectual property of the Clashing Sabers Network and ClashingSabers.net. All licensed sounds and images are the property of their respective copyright holders and are used for informational and educational purposes only. For more information on our nonprofit or to nominate a teacher, go to ClashingSabers.net. For questions or inquiries, please email us at ClashingSabersNetwork@gmail.com.
You're just going to walk away?